You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What is happening, everybody? Welcome to another UFC Breakdown collab. It's myself and Brady from DFS by the Numbers, and subscribe to both of our channels over the Stochastic DFS channel as well as Brady's channel. Like this video, subscribe to, like I said, both of our channels. We're going to be breaking down UFC 29. We've been doing this video every Wednesday. Unfortunately, didn't record last week, not really because of either our faults, but there's just really weird pricing with DraftKings, and they didn't have the slate, all the pricing up until Wednesday afternoon, and Brady and I's schedule just didn't work after that. But we're back here for UFC 299, and I'm really looking forward to this card. It's one of the better pay-per-views we've seen in quite some time, so looking forward to it. I know Brady is as well, because we were talking about it right before here. So, Brady, starting, we'll talk about the main event, but this one versus UFC 300, gun to your head, if you could only watch one, which would you pick?
Man, oh, gun to my head. I'm going to say 300 just because I'm planning on going. So I'm going to say 300, but it's close. I mean, flip a coin on either. I think both cards are very good. I know a lot of people are talking crap about UFC 300. I mean, it's a good card. It's a really good card, and as is this one. I think this card, 299, is one of the better cards in a very long time. I'll say that.
But also, part of the reason people are crapping on UFC 300 is not, if it was UFC 301 and that was the card, people would be like, oh, this is a banger of a card. But people looked at UFC 300 and they were expecting the main event to be like Thor versus Poseidon or something ridiculous, but which partially was Dana's fault, because he had built it up where he's like, I'm going to have a main event that you guys didn't see coming. And then it was Pereira versus Hill, which is a good fight, but it was built up as if it was going to be something, you know, out of this world that we didn't expect. So I'm really looking forward to this card, looking forward to that one. And we'll start by breaking down the main event, which honestly is one of the only fights on this card that I'm not super looking forward to. I like Vera and Mal and O'Malley individually, but I am a little bit concerned how they're going to match up stylistically, with Cheeto typically getting off to slow starts, and then also O'Malley potentially maybe being able to just stay at range and pick him apart. But from a DFS standpoint, how are you going to approach the Cheeto O'Malley main event?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure it out, because I feel like there's a case to be made in terms of fading O'Malley for, you know, a bunch of reasons. The first reason is he's going to be extremely popular. He has some of the best star power on the entire slate. You know, a lot of people are going to be watching this card because of Sean O'Malley. So probably one of the more popular plays of the card. He's expensive at 9,200. So, you know, for an ownership perspective, if you do fade O'Malley, you're probably fading what, almost half the field. So I don't hate that. And then, like you said, you know, I kind of have concerns about the upside of Sean O'Malley. I do like him to win. I'm picking him to win. I'm picking him to win by decision. But yeah, this fight could be a little lackluster, because Sean O'Malley's not going to want to go out there and go all out. He's not going to go out there and brawl with Marlon Vera. He's going to have to really pick his shots. And yeah, Marlon Vera is a guy that's going to slow the fight down, especially early on. It could take a little bit for this fight to get going, third, fourth, fifth round, up until the fight actually starts happening. And I can see a scenario where Sean O'Malley is kind of just picking apart Marlon Vera across 25 minutes, not having to do a ton. I don't see any wrestling upside, obviously, for O'Malley. I don't really see much finishing upside for O'Malley as well. I know a lot of people think he's knocking out Marlon Vera, going to be the first one to do it. I'm not so sure. Marlon Vera, 32 fights. This guy's never even been knocked down. I don't think I can recall Marlon Vera even being hurt. I mean, this guy's just next level durable. So in a 25-minute decision where O'Malley is going to be probably outstriking Vera, I'm not sure where the upside really is. And we have 13 other fights this week, guys with finishing upside, guys with wrestling, and I'm not sure O'Malley really brings that to the table. So I'm not sure if I'm going to outright fade O'Malley yet. It's something I've thought about. But yeah, I mean, my preferred play is going to be Marlon Vera at 7,000. He's extremely cheap. He has 25 minutes to work with. I think as a cash play, it's, you know, Marlon Vera is as good as you get, because you're going to get toughness, durability, probably 25 minutes, maybe some big moments, maybe a knockdown. This guy's a lot of power. So yeah, my preferred play is going to be Marlon Vera here at 7,000.
It's a tricky one for me as well, because I feel fairly confident O'Malley wins just based on some of the numbers from the fight. Marlon Vera has a negative striking differential. He lands less strikes than O'Malley at a pretty significant difference, 4.37 significant strikes landed per minute for Vera versus 7.25 for Sean O'Malley. And then also, Chito absorbs almost twice as many significant strikes per minute compared to what O'Malley does. The problem with O'Malley, though, is what is his actual finishing upside, which you were talking about before, is it's not only that Chito's never been finished, he's never been dropped, he doesn't even have a scratch on him. Like, we've seen fights where he's gone up against Rob Font, and how many significant strikes did Font land in that fight?
A million.
271 significant strikes Rob Font landed. There was not a mark on Chito at the end of the fight. It's crazy. Part of it is because he's very defensively sound. He rolls well with punches, so it's not like he takes all of them all that flush, but he just takes damage extremely well, which makes it hard for me to think that O'Malley is going to finish him. If there is a finish in the fight, I think it's probably a little bit more likely to come from the Chito Vera side. I do think this is a fight I'm probably going to be underweight to, and obviously it's nice that it's a 5-round fight. I'm almost always close to all in on 5-round main events, but we've got another 5-round fight that you and I might be breaking down here soon as well, if it's one that we're interested in, which I think we're certainly going to be. So it's a fight that I'm going to pick O'Malley to win. My preferred DFS play is Vera, just because a Vera win, he's guaranteed to be in the optimal lineup. An O'Malley win is maybe he's in the optimal lineup, maybe he isn't. So picking O'Malley to win by decision like you, my preferred play is also going to be Marlon Chito Vera. As far as a high-priced fighter that you're targeting on this slate, where are you looking? You're going to look at the co-main event with Benoit Saint-Denis, because that is a 5-round fighter. Is there a different pay-up option you're targeting for this slate?
Yeah, I think Saint-Denis is a great play. We could talk more about that fight in a bit. But for me, it's going to be a guy that I think has not only first-round upside, and it's not often I say this, but I literally think he has 60-second knockout upside, and that's Rebelles de Spain, 9,300. You can watch this guy's entire career in less than 5 minutes. He has multiple finishes, literally under like 15 seconds. And yeah, he has a ton of power. This guy is just a freak. 87-inch reach for de Spain. The guy is 6'7". Josh Parisian's a big dude, and he's going to be towering over, Josh Parisian. And in theory, maybe Josh Parisian does have some upside here if he was to get this fight down to the mat. But I have a feeling Josh Parisian's going to go out there and stand and strike with Despain at distance. And if he does that, he's probably getting knocked out. And like I said, potentially even in 60 seconds. So Despain, he's 9,300. He's expensive, but he's not even the most expensive guy on the slate. You have Alma Bayev, who's more expensive. I don't mind. And then you have Gamrot, who's 9,400. But Despain's a guy who brings first-round upside. Like, I was looking at his first-round prop on Bet Online Sportsbook, and it was like something crazy, like minus...
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Like minus 175. I think even got bet down to like minus 230, something like that. And his money line's like minus 275. So that tells you everything you need to know. If this guy wins, it is going to be in the first round. And I think it could even come in that 60 seconds, get that 60-second bonus as well.
He's going to have a very, very significant athleticism advantage, which is something that definitely stands out to me when I watched what there is to see on Despain. Like you said, his entire career, I think it spans something like 4 minutes. He's got like 3 wins inside of a minute. So it doesn't take long to watch all of his fights. And from what we have seen, super athletic and obviously massive amount of power to a guy with a Taekwondo background. I'll talk a little bit here about the co-main event, Dustin Poirier taking on Benoit Saint-Denis. And this is going to be a 5-round fight, which I assume that most everybody's going to know. But also, these big UFC pay-per-view cards where it's $200,000 to first, it does bring a lot more casual MMA DFS players. I wouldn't be surprised if there are a handful of people in the field that aren't aware that the co-main event is 5 rounds. And I pretty heavily favor Benoit Saint-Denis. And coming into the week, I did favor him, but I was giving Poirier probably more of a chance a week or two ago than I am as of right now. I don't usually put a ton of stock into fighter interviews, but there's a lot of stuff that Poirier said this week that's kind of made me feel uncomfortable about what his motivations were for taking this fight, because what he said, first he hinted at retirement, which is never really all that encouraging of a sign. But then also, the fight kind of doesn't make a lot of sense on paper for where Poirier is at in his career. And then his reason being has kind of been along the lines of, I want to see if I still have that dog inside of me, which kind of indicates he might be questioning himself a little bit. And then also, this has been the sort of matchup that Poirier has lost in a handful of times over the last few years. Saint-Denis puts on an immense amount of pressure, and somebody who's a very, very good offensive wrestler and grappler, he lands 4.55 takedowns per 15 minutes. A lot of the losses that we've seen from Poirier in the later stages of his career, he's struggled against people who have put on a lot of wrestling pressure. And while it did happen against somebody like Khabib Nurmagomedov, I don't even put that much stock into that because that's something Khabib does to a lot of the people that he fights. But even Dan Hooker took Poirier down four times. We saw Michael Chandler took Poirier down three times in their fight. It's also something where he struggled when he got controlled by Charles Oliveira when they fought against each other, and Poirier was a slight favorite in that fight. So if Benoit Saint-Denis sticks to that game plan where he's just going to attack with a wrestling pace and pressure, I think he could overwhelm Poirier and could ultimately either finish him with ground and pound or maybe even submit him. One thing I do worry a little bit about, though, is Benoit Saint-Denis, is he going to come in with a good game plan, or is he going to come and just trade on the feet with Poirier? That's where Poirier could certainly be live, because I do have questions about the defensive striking of Benoit Saint-Denis. We've seen him getting hit clean on the feet a couple of times. Thiago Moises briefly dropped him to a knee when they fought against each other. But Benoit Saint-Denis is the payup option. I assume that I'm going to wind up with the most amount of exposure to. How are you seeing the co-main event, Brady?
Yeah, same thing. It's a main event where a co-main event where, yeah, we got five rounds just like the main event. And I think I'm going to be just a lot heavier on this co-main event. I can see myself going nearly 100% own on it, just because it's hard to see this fight not scoring well, just the way that really both these guys fight. You know, this is going to be an absolute car crash. It's going to be an absolute war. I'm on the Benoit Saint-Denis side myself. He's 8,900, not too expensive. There's 6 guys more expensive than him. And then as far as, you know, Dustin Poirier, yeah, he's definitely a live dog. You know, they're, you know, if he is coming in here 100% motivated, ready to go, maybe he does go out there and knock out Saint-Denis. But yeah, I like the wrestling and the grappling of Saint-Denis, the finish upside, the durability. He's younger at this point. So yeah, a lot of reasons leading me to be on the Benoit Saint-Denis side this week. So I think he's going to be probably my highest owned fighter this week. I think it's pretty close between him and, like I said, Despain.
Yeah, I'm going to be 100% on this fight, because if Saint-Denis wins, I assume it's going to come with wrestling and grappling. And then if Poirier wins, I mean, every single Poirier fight typically scores well. So really good fight to target. I'm going to be leaning more towards the Saint-Denis side, which I assume the field is going to be as well. And then if we talk about the mid-range, there are a lot of good fights to target in the mid-range here, Brady. And I'm going to start by talking about Ion Cutelaba, and the reason being is that he is somebody who, for DraftKings purposes, just gold, because he either wins in the first round, puts up a big score, or he doesn't win in the first round, totally gasses out, and then typically gets finished in like the second or third round. And then taking on Felipe Lins, who's an older fighter now, he is, 38, nearly 39 years old, Felipe Lins, and also doesn't really have the most output. He does have a 100% takedown defense to this point in his UFC career, but he hasn't fought the most lethal offensive wrestler. So I don't know how telling that number is, but he only lands 3.59 significant strikes per minute, typically doesn't wrestle all that much. I don't know if he's going to be able to withhold the early pace and pressure that Cutelaba puts on. And then if he does happen to stay alive past the first 5 minutes, I think he probably finishes Cutelaba in the second round. So I think it's another really good fight to target in the mid-range. And my preferred side is Cutelaba. I'm going to pick him to win by first round finish. Anything standing out to you in the mid-range?
Yeah, that Cutelaba fight is a fight that I think may go kind of under the radar. I don't hear a ton of people talking about it. And it's a fight that it's kind of ugly. Like, I don't trust either Cutelaba or Lins, but I think it scores very well. So I'm going to be very heavily invested in that one. But the fight I do like here is going to be that Curtis Blaydes, Jailton Almeida fight. And Jailton Almeida, 8,000, I think is my preferred play. But I have a feeling whoever wins this fight's going to look minus 1,000. Either Curtis Blaydes, it is able to stuff the takedowns, keeps it on the feet, and knocks out Jailton Almeida. Or I have a feeling if Jailton Almeida gets on top of Curtis Blaydes, it could get bad very quickly. You know, Curtis Blaydes, we know him for his offensive wrestling, but defensively, we've never really seen him, you know, taken down. Outside of like Cody East back in 2016, Alexander Volkov took him down once. But other than that, nobody's, you know, really tried to take this guy down. And Almeida's a guy that, You watch any one of his fights, he's going out there and he's shooting takedowns within the first 15 to 20 seconds. And yes, he's undersized for heavyweight, but he's going out there and picking up 265-pound men like Jarzino Rosenstruck, like Parker Porter, like Derek Lewis, like it's nothing. This guy is so physically strong. And yes, Curtis Blaydes on paper is the better wrestler, but you know, Joelinton's just going to have a significant advantage in the BJJ. So if Joelinton can get on top, I think he can make it look easy. But if it turns out Blaydes is able to stuff these takedowns, keeps it on the feet, or even takes down Joelinton and gets on top of him, could potentially pound him out. I just think the winner looks like a massive fave here and scores very well in it. 8,200 for Blaydes, 8,000 for Almeida. I think the winner scores pretty well here. And I personally lean Almeida, like I said, at 8,000. I think he has a ton of upside. I think there's some potential recency bias because, you know, these guys were supposed to fight not too long ago, and I think Almeida was around like minus 200. So I think people are really low on Almeida after that Derek Lewis performance, which, you know, was it a terrible fight? Yes, but he did go out there in 50-45, 50-44 Lewis. So I like Almeida, but I like this fight overall.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Yeah, I like the fight as well. I prefer the Blaydes side a little bit, but it's still one that I think makes a lot of sense for tournament purposes. And like you said, it's one where if Almeida is able to land takedowns, I think he probably submits Curtis Blaydes. We haven't seen Curtis Blaydes on his back. It stands to reason with him with a wrestling background, probably isn't all that great off his back. And also most heavyweights aren't great off their back once they end up getting to that position. But with the wrestling background of Blaydes, I do slightly favor him to defend the takedowns. And then if that does happen, I think he's live to knock out Joelinton Almeida, who I don't think Almeida has terrible striking, but he's clearly uncomfortable striking because he looks to wrestle immediately in every fight that we've seen him in so far. So I'd be interested to see Blaydes stuff takedowns and kind of see what Almeida looks like on the feet. But really good fight to target in the heavyweight division. So I agree with you on that. Good one to get to in the mid-range. As far as cheap fighters go, there's no real punts that are like super cheap I like, but there are some 7K fighters that I am liking for this slate. Any of them that are standing out to you above the other ones, Brady?
Not entirely. Like, I think there's a lot of, you know, underdogs that kind of stick out, but not really one that really sticks out. Like, I think in terms of a dart throw, I think Josh Parisian, like, if he gets a takedown, he's probably finishing to Spain. I think we talked about Marlon Vera at 7K. I think another dart throw could potentially be like Joanne Wood, 7,200, if she actually shows up and, you know, stuffs the takedowns. We talked a little bit about the Dustin Poirier-St. Denis fight. I think Dustin Poirier is in play. I guess the one that I'd be most excited about would be maybe Gilbert Burns, 7,600. And I'm actually picking JDM, but, you know, just like the Linz Kudalaba fight, just like the Blaydes Almeida fight, this is another fight in that mid-range that I really want to target this week because it seems like a really binary fight where if Gilbert Burns gets Jack Della Maddalena down, like he could sub him. We've seen Jack put into so many bad spots on the mat in pretty much every single one of his fights. And credit to Jack, he's able to fight out of those bad positions every single time. But against Gilbert Burns, it's a whole different other animal. And that Gilbert Burns is going to be the best grappler that Jack Della's faced ever in by a mile. It's not even close. So in terms of an underdog that's pretty cheap, like Gilbert Burns, 7,600, although I am picking Jack to win by knockout, I feel like this fight's kind of more 50-50. So don't mind some Burns. But like I said, I think there's a lot of underdogs sticking out, but you know, kind of nothing I really love this week.
It's Gilbert Burns for me as well. The fight that really stands out to me is the JDM fight against Basil Hafez, which I'm putting up here on screen right now. And Hafez's takedown accuracy wasn't great in that fight. He shot 20 times, ended up getting 3 takedowns. I think he took that fight on 4 or 5 days' notice, though, if I remember correctly. But what's really concerning to me about Jack Della Maddalena in that fight is going up against Basil Hafez, when he did get taken down, he did struggle to get up. He was able to defend himself to where he wasn't really allowing Hafez to mount a lot of offense. There weren't that many too precarious situations for JDM. But if Basil Hafez was able to get 7 minutes of control time in a 15-minute fight, it doesn't really bode all that well for what it would look like for JDM if Gilbert Burns takes him down. Because if Gilbert Burns gets top position, I think he probably submits him if he's able to land takedowns. The question is he able to do that before getting knocked out? That remains to be seen. I think it's a very close fight. But these fights, striker versus grappler, almost always score well on DraftKings, because I think the most likely outcome is either Gilbert Burns wins by submission or JDM ends up winning by knockout. So really good fight to target. Just because there aren't that many fighters to like in the 7K range, I'm going to go with Gilbert Burns, because I do know that in a win, he's going to likely score very well on DraftKings. Anything else you want to add from this card, Brady?
No, I think we covered it. We talked about the main event. We talked about the co-main event, which me and you seem to be very, very high on. I think we touched on pretty much everything. It's one of those cards where, you know, I think it's pretty obvious which fights you want to target, and then it's pretty obvious which fights you kind of want to stay away from. So 14 fights to work with. Should be a fun slate, and yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
All right, guys, thank you very much for watching. If you're not done yet, like this video and subscribe to both our channels, the Stochastic YouTube channel, as well as Brady's channel, DFS by the Numbers, and lots of content coming out from Brady throughout the week. He does breakdowns from a Prize Picks perspective, DraftKings, and does numerous betting breakdowns, so check out all of his content. And then on Friday, I'm going to be using the Sims tool at Stochastic to break down the fight using simulation angle and figuring out where the best leverage spots are, considering some of the ownership projections and all that. So check out all the rest of our content. Good luck this week, guys. See you back here next week.
See you.